It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. A week ago, the United States Department of Agriculture announced a $12 billion aid plan for farmers suffering from the effects of U.S. trade policy. This morning, we'll talk about how this might help or hurt Wisconsin farmers, and we'll talk about the short and long-term effects of national trade policy on Wisconsin agriculture. If you're a farmer, how do you see this aid plan helping you? What do you think will be the long-term effects of the current trade conflicts with China? Do you expect to recapture the markets you lost when the Chinese started buying ag products elsewhere? Let us know at 800-642-1234. Email address is ideas@wpr.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. My guest is Paul Mitchell, director of the Rank Agribusiness Institute at the University of Wisconsin-Madison and an associate professor of agricultural and applied economics at the College of Agricultural and Life Sciences. Paul Mitchell, welcome to the Morning Show.
Well, thank you.
Let's start by having you break down this three-part plan that the USDA announced last week to offset losses created by recent trade policies. What's in this, and what does it mean?
Well, the way the Secretary announced it as three programs, the Market Facilitation Program, which is some sort of a payment to soybeans, sorghum, corn, wheat, cotton, dairy, and hogs farmers. There's also the Food Purchase and Distribution Program to buy up, it says, fruits, nuts, rice, legumes, beef, pork, and milk for distribution to food banks and other nutrition programs. Then the last one is a Trade Promotion Program. To basically develop new markets for our farm products.
The big headline, of course, is the USDA's payments directly to farmers. This is a direct payment to farmers, right?
Yeah, that's what they call, that's the Market Facilitation Program. The Secretary had an interview that was put out in Reuters that explained some of the eight main ideas, and he called them direct payments, is my understanding.
So, and we'll get more details about this as we go along. There's just not a whole lot out there yet, is there?
No, that's the hard part yet. He did, in his interview, suggest relative dollar amounts. He said something like $7 to $8 billion of the 12 would be for the Market Facilitation Program as support towards farmers directly. The Food Purchasing Program would be a large part as well, $4 to $5 billion. That leaves just $200 million for that trade promotion program.
So what's your take on how farmers feel about the changes in U.S. trade policy, the tariffs on imports? Some farmers are calling for trade, not aid. What's your sense of how the farmers are responding to the USDA's proposal?
Well, I haven't talked to anyone in the last week about it that's a farmer. But before that, you know, we've been talking about them coming. And it's so they knew there was at least going to be something coming if everything followed through that was going to happen. And very much it was the trade, not aid. All the major farm organizations, you know, have their pushes towards trade, not aid, as you had said it. There's a large portion of our commodities are exported, and so just name your organization. You know, soybeans, half of our corn is, or I'm sorry, half our soybeans is exported. Corn is roughly 20% if you include the ethanol and dried distillers grains and things like that. Dairy is 15%. Poultry is 16%. Cotton is 76%. All these, you know, sorghum 59%. All these trade is very important to all of them, and they knew tariffs would cause problems for the prices for the farmers. And so that's been, and I hear that as well. It's not so much the trade issue, it's what's it going to do to the current prices for the corn or soybeans or milk I sell.
Well, what about, I don't pretend to understand the agricultural commodities market. I want that caveat out there right up front. So there are some prices for this year's crop are already locked in. I'm not quite sure how that works, but because of the way agricultural commodities are bought and sold internationally, there are forward contracts and so forth. So the real pain of changes in trade policy and their effects going to be felt this year, or is this something that is more about the following year? Is there going to have to be another USDA program to help out then?
That's a good point. And no, some farmers do forward contract and lock in the prices for the grain or the milk that they're going to produce, and that that protects them from these price downturns because they, you know, they locked in, you know, make up a number, $9.50, $10 a bushel, whatever they were able to lock in. The reality is not a lot of farmers don't all use them for all their grain, or soybeans. And so there's, always said, the farmers are eternal optimists. A lot of them do like to think there's going to be an upturn in the market. They want to have some grain ready for that. And so in the short term, some did lock in some prices for a big chunk of their crop and will weather this price downturn that we have currently. Others did not. And not all farmers, is my understanding, will have done all of their grain.
Mm-hmm.
So longer term, though, yeah, you can't avoid this event unless you locked in the corn for the next 3 or 4 years, which you technically can do, but that's extremely risky.
And there's a lot being made of the fact that the Chinese didn't make purchases of U.S. agricultural products. They went elsewhere. Brazil, I think, probably some came from Canada. They've just gone shopping and found other sources. Is the international trade in agricultural commodities is pretty complex. How big a deal is this really? Some of the reading I've done suggests that, for example, in the soybean and the grain markets, some farmers are saying, well, okay, you know, we lost the Chinese, but there are a lot of other places we can sell this stuff, and they don't all have tariffs against us. How important is the Chinese market to agricultural products? And maybe we could focus that a little more and say, how important is it in Wisconsin?
It is important. The Chinese market is. I mean, they are the major purchaser out there on the world markets for these commodities like soybeans and corn and dairy products, which are all important to Wisconsin. But there is somewhat of a shell game that goes on in the sense that if we were normally, China is our major trade partner for soybeans, a big chunk of our soybeans go to China. Now China is going to buy those soybeans from Brazil. Well, whoever Brazil would have sold their soybeans to will now be in the market for soybeans, and so we can sell them to them. And so there is sort of a shell game of moving things around. It creates a lot of complexities in developing new relationships or shipping changes and all that stuff. So those costs are real to a business and to the companies moving these grains and beans around. So it's not a costless reshuffling. But and some people, the prices are lower or higher with the tariffs. They aren't going to buy as much. And so there will be losses.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what happens on trade, is my understanding.
Okay. Well, it's hard to fit all that into an internet meme, and so the issues tend to get boiled down a little, maybe oversimplified quite a bit in coverage and online discussions, and that's why we're trying to get into some of the details here. Want to know what our listeners think? Are you a farmer? Are you for or against President Trump's trade policies? What do you think of the $12 billion aid package? If you received direct aid from the USDA, what would you do with it? And what do you think about Trump's decision to renegotiate trade deals? Do you think it's long overdue, or is there risk of ruining a good thing? 800-642-1234. Let's take a call quickly from Jeremy in Racine. Jeremy, good morning. Welcome to the morning show.
Good morning. Thanks a lot for taking my call. I think a lot of the farmers here in Wisconsin need to reevaluate their business plans in regards to these tariffs that are going to be coming down the pipeline. It's only going to get harder for them. Take the $12 billion, reevaluate your operation, and maybe either scale it down or look for different markets. Anytime you have a business that depends a large portion of their percentage on an export, it opens you up to vulnerability, especially with emerging markets in South America and things like that for soy and egg animals and stuff like that. So it's no different than any other economy. If you're producing more goods than the surrounding communities or the state can consume, you have to rely heavily on exporting. And when these trade wars come, you really find yourself being exposed too much. So maybe scale it down or reevaluate their operations and start looking towards different crops.
Paul Mitchell, quickly, we've got about 30 seconds before we have to break for news.
Yeah, that's some people say we need to cut back production. The problem is a big chunk of the world depends upon it, developing nations and such. And it's still a short-term solution, but in the end, people respond to prices, and that's what we argue, that they're going to, if these trade tariffs and these subsidies to farmers goof up the price incentives, it kind of creates a problem of oversupply or undersupply, in this case.
Okay. All right, Jeremy, thanks for your call. You could be next at 800-642-1234. We're talking about how trade policy is affecting Wisconsin agriculture, and we'd like you to join our conversation. My guest, Paul Mitchell, director of the Rank Agribusiness Institute at the UW-Madison. I'm John Munson. This is The Morning Show on Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll be back right after the news. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. This hour, we're discussing short and long-term effects of President Trump's trade policies and the recent USDA announcement on some aid for agriculture. We're talking about specifically how this impacts Wisconsin agriculture with Paul Mitchell, director of the Rank Agribusiness Institute at the University of Wisconsin-Madison and an associate professor of agricultural and applied economics at the College of Agricultural and Life Sciences, and with you, if you choose to join us. If you're a farmer, how do you feel about current U.S. trade policy and how it affects you? And what about this $12 billion aid package? If you receive direct aid from the USDA, what are you going to do with it? And do you support the renegotiation of trade deals? Is it long overdue, or are we messing up a good thing? Let us know what you think. 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. ideas@WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. And I guess one of the other things I'd like our listeners to consider, President Trump is saying, be patient. My policies are going to benefit you in the long run. You just have to wait for it a little bit. In the meantime, here's $12 billion. What do you think about that? What's your view on this? 800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org, or you can tweet at WPR Mornings. Let's take a call here, Paul Mitchell. We'll go to Steve, who's calling us from Madison this morning. Steve, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, good morning. I would just like to point out to listeners, been in agriculture all my life, that the farmers are really secondary exporters of raw farm products. The primary exporters are Archer Daniels Midland, Conagra, Cargill, and maybe States Grain. And so when you just say the word farmers, they're really kind of giving a distorted view of who's really shipping things overseas.
Steve, thanks. Thanks for making that point. Paul Mitchell, what about that? I mean, the farmers aren't directly sending their stuff overseas. It goes somewhere else first. Who's really being hurt?
Well, no, he's exactly right. Very few individual farmers actually are direct exporters. It's the different processors or handlers, shippers of different kinds. I mean, a lot goes down the Mississippi River as grain and out through the lakes and everything, out through the St. Lawrence Seaway. No, the big issue, though, is it does affect the local prices through the markets. You know, all these markets are affected, and that's been our policy for years, has been to export our surpluses. And as that first caller mentioned, you know, we are export, if you're export-driven or part of your economy is on this agricultural components, you are vulnerable to these price fluctuations.
Steve, thanks for that call. 800-642-1234. Paul Mitchell, I'd like to hear from you more about the food purchase and distribution portion of the USDA's plan. How's that going to work? Will, for example, Wisconsin's cranberry farmers be included in that?
Most likely. I mean, again, all the details are thin right now. They're still, I'm sure, scrambling to sort this out, but cranberries are doing poorly right now in terms of prices for farmers, and export has been a part of that to Europe especially. But so I'm hopeful with this talk of the not having so much tariffs for food commodities with Europe that maybe that'll help on the cranberry growers. But I think it's really going to be focused on the nuts is a big one, all the different kinds like almonds, pistachios, walnuts are all 65-70% are exported. So that's who it really hits, is those nut growers. But some of our fruits are in the same boat. Cherries, apples, and stuff like that are, 15-20% is exported.
Mm-hmm. And I don't pretend to understand how the markets work, so I'm asking a question because I don't understand it. Would something like the food purchase and distribution portion of this plan, does that have the potential to actually mess up the markets? And how has this gone in the past when the government has bought up surplus commodities?
Yeah, I mean, they have done this in the past, and they have authority to do so. And I was just a child in the 80s, and I remember the late 70s, early 80s, when the government did buy, and if you had met certain income rules, you received big blocks of cheese, as I remember. There's other, and so it buys it up to reduce the supply so that the prices are supported somewhat. The problem is if you're buying or if you're getting cheese or nuts from the government for free at a food bank, then you don't buy it. And so you're substituting away from something else. So it's kind of a short-term solution. It's a little bit of that shell game again, in the sense that, okay, if I'm getting free nuts or free peanut butter, I don't need to buy it. So do you really increase demand? It might work if you store it. So that's the potential there, is you can increase demand in the short run by buying something off the market at the government level and then releasing it later once there's the supply has diminished and balance out the price some. That's the only way it really does much. Otherwise, people just go off and stop buying what you're giving them.
Well, and this may be an oversimplification, but is the real problem here that we just produce too much?
Yeah, we have a perennial problem. We are the world's largest producer of corn and soybeans. I mean, we literally produce about a third of the world's corn and soybeans. China is the world's second largest corn producer in terms of, total bushels produced. But just a few years ago, their average yields were half of ours. So they've got we're very good at growing certain things like corn and soybeans and things like that. And so when you're really good at something, you tend to export it. I mean, just, look at Hollywood. We're good at making movies people want to watch. We export it.
Let's take another call here. Elizabeth is with us in Wausau. Elizabeth, good morning. Thanks for joining us on the morning show.
Morning. Thank you for having. I wanted to make the comment that our markets have been fluctuating overseas quite frequently. This idea of these trade wars going on are not a new concept. In the history, we've had China ordering goods, letting them rot in the dock here, and claiming that they haven't received our goods, which is shorting our markets. In those instances, I'd like to see us giving these policies a chance and letting them take some time to see what type of rewards and benefits that we can see.
All right, Elizabeth, thanks for the call. Elizabeth, echoing a little bit of what the Trump administration is saying, you need to be patient. These policies are going to take time to bear fruit. So just wait. This is actually going to turn out better for you. Paul Mitchell, what do you think of that?
Yeah, that's exactly what I always is like a little over a month ago. I was in Iowa, and that's what the farmer was saying. We kind of knew these tariffs are probably coming, and that was his point, is that, yes, I understand this is how it's going to be done, and we can weather this, is how his view was, and that we do have to, give these policies a chance. It's to force the Chinese and others to come to the negotiating table. And, time will tell. Is that a good strategy or not? We'll find out. It's the current strategy of our current administration, and so that's what we're going to try. Mm-hmm. And, why not give it a chance? But if you're not a supporter, well, then you're obviously upset.
800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. You can also send an email to ideas@WPR.org. And you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Paul Mitchell is my guest, director of the Rank Agribusiness Institute at the University of Wisconsin-Madison and associate professor of agriculture and applied economics at the College of Agricultural and Life Sciences. A lot in the news lately about U.S. trade policy and its effect on the agriculture segment of our economy. And since Wisconsin is still a major agricultural state, we're taking a look at how this might affect our agribusiness economy here in the Badger State. We had a caller, Tim from Viroqua, who couldn't stay with us, but called in to say He said he wanted to remind everyone that only a third of the aid package is going to farmers. The other two-thirds are new bureaucratic programs to fix the problems that Trump's tariffs have caused. Paul Mitchell, what do you think of that?
There's always administrative costs, yes, and I haven't seen any numbers to confirm or deny what he's saying in terms of percentages, proportions. But yeah, the secretary just said roughly $7 to $8 billion is direct aid to farmers, $4 to $5 billion for the food purchasing, and $200 million for the trade and promotion program. No idea how much of that is administrative cost at all.
What do we know about what the plan is for this trade and promotion program? Because one of the things the administration is saying is, hey, look, so China's not buying from us, but there are a lot of other places we can sell our stuff, and we're going to spend some time marketing, and we'll help you out. What do we know about the strategy there? What's the government going to do?
They've had programs like this in the past. They always do market promotion programs to, if you, like the Wisconsin ginseng growers were a group that have been able to capitalize on getting a grant to help them develop markets in Asia for their ginseng. We've had these programs. And so this is an enhancement of a program that's generally been working. How specifically it's going to be spent, we don't know yet. I haven't seen any information on it. But back, like I said early on, it is somewhat of a shell game. There's a certain amount of people who want soybeans for various reasons. And if you can't buy them from the Americans because there's a high tariff, you're in China, you'll buy them from Brazil or somewhere else. Well, then whoever Brazil was going to sell their beans to is now in the market for soybeans. So we can, as long as there's no tariffs for that individual countries, there'll be moving things around to fill those needs. And this trade promotion program could be finding out who those people are that are not buying their soybeans now because Brazil is selling them to China. And there you go. You can start a program there to develop a relationship with them. A lot of it is personal connection, is my guess, sending people over to meet with people and negotiating, talking, getting to know each other and how their ports work and how they can take the shipping and all that kind of information gathering that you have to do on the ground.
Well, relationships, that's really the basis of all sales.
Yeah, I talk to anyone in sales. That's a good point. You're really selling yourself, and then your commodity you're selling or item you're selling is secondary.
Mm-hmm.
If they like you, they'll buy it if they have the money and they want it.
Well, I guess what I'm getting at here is, will our trade policy have an impact on the credibility of the people who are promoting trade?
That's every sales group is always, trying to maintain a good reputation if you can. I mean, that's just part of what you're selling. And I'm not sure what the world view is of this. Is this an opportunity from some countries to say, wow, here's a chance to get high-quality soybeans or corn from the U.S. We haven't been able to afford it before. Now they're willing to help us out. And mm-hmm. So you can start that connection.
Okay.
Income growth in some of these parts of the world has been long-standing, and so they are, the people in these countries do have money, and so maybe it's a chance to develop new trade relations.
Okay.
However, you're losing existing ones.
That's the risky part because you don't know. Of course, farming is a giant gambling operation, really, and you really do have to be an optimist to be in the business. I can see that. Let's take a call from Rick in Mazamani next. Rick, good morning. You're on the morning show.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I'm just sort of confused about this whole issue that farming is a long-term investment. And when you have instability in our basically negotiating posture, I don't see how that tends well for long-term relationships. You talked about the sales being a relationship process. I also think that direct payments, it's fascinating to me that we have no money for anything, but we seem to have direct payments for either Foxconn or to the farmers because they're being hurt by trade policies. I think that... I'm just so confused about this issue. If yields overseas are lower, then if we basically push ourselves out of that market for a year or two, aren't the Chinese going to be working on improving their yields and basically hurting ourselves in the long term? I'm just confused about this whole issue, how it can possibly be good to get into a trade tiff with our partners, with our market.
Yeah, Rick, thanks for the call. Paul Mitchell, it is a complex issue. Can you try and clear it up for us?
Well, no, he's right about the uncertainty it creates. The real question you have to ask yourself is this extra uncertainty worth it to bring us back to the negotiating table with some of these countries. Some people argue it isn't, that it's just a stupid idea. We're wasting a bunch of emotional energy, ruining relationships that have been strong. Other people saying it's a good idea. We need this as a way to get people to the negotiating table so we can finally, you know, be serious about this, trying to remove some of these trade issues. And to me, these are strategies, and some people support certain strategies, some people do not. That's how I see this. And obviously, some people are not supporters of the administration, and some people are. No one's tried this in a while, we'll say that, but it's usually a bad idea for most people's perspectives that are into trade and economics, creating these instabilities, uncertainties. Businesses don't really like that in general.
Mm-hmm.
So, do you like this as a strategy? It's a matter of opinion.
Mm-hmm. Well, and so many aspects of farming are inherently uncertain. So if you add market stability, instability for an industry that's already uncertain, how much of an impact does that have when you have to plan a year or two out for what you're going to grow and produce, and you don't know what's going to happen? How does that affect how farmers make their plans?
You have added it more on price uncertainty from the farmer perspective. It's more uncertainty in prices, and so that's a problem. And there are tools out there. There's crop insurance, which includes a revenue proportion. There's also the markets. You can use them and such to forward contract to help reduce some of that price uncertainty. And a lot of people use the insurance, and some use the markets. But it does have a cost. And the idea is, as a strategy, is it we're going to return long-term gains? Some people say yes, some people say no. And I guess time will tell. Short term, it's bad. Uncertainty.
Agriculture Secretary Perdue acknowledged that this program is just a short-term solution. So what happens next when the $12 billion is gone, when the USDA has bought up all the surplus crops, when presumably the president has attempted to renegotiate trade deals? What happens then?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. And, you know, of course, we don't know. We haven't heard anything about what will happen long term. In the short term, though, it's very clear that the farmers have been in some really low times, you know, across a lot of commodities. I think the USDA projection was like a 12-year low for farm income. This is all crops, all at livestock. That was at the beginning of this year. And you look at the margins, they were going to be okay, sort of a break-even deal maybe on corn and soybeans. But then when these prices have collapsed, particularly for soybeans with these tariffs and everything, you know, those margins disappeared, became negative quickly. And so it's doing a trade war with agricultural commodities right now it's poor timing in that sense that a lot of that income was already thin or negative for these farmers. So I think that's the motivation for this this direct payment of whatever, how it's going to be managed, is to help them out because they have seen that it is affecting farmers right now,
okay,
short term.
And that's where we'll have to leave it. Thank you very much for being with us, Paul Mitchell. Appreciate your time this morning.
All right. You're welcome.
Paul Mitchell is director of the Renk Agribusiness Institute at the University of Wisconsin-Madison and associate professor of agriculture and applied economics at the College of Agricultural and Life Sciences at the UW-Madison. The news is coming up next, and after the news, we'll meet Margaret Engebretson, one of two Democratic candidates running in the 7th Congressional District in the August 14th primary election. Stay tuned for that. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson.